Okay, 7 p.m. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here tonight. I hope we can be edified by the Word and that we may learn and meditate upon these topics on the family that we're addressing. And I think they're very, very important for us to refresh, to think about. It doesn't matter in which stage of marriage we are. Some are new, some have gone through for several years, some still single. But it's important for us because it's one of the institutions that God instituted. One of the institutions that God set up is the institution of marriage. And it's worth for us to learn from it. Tonight I want to talk about a topic. It's a general topic, and I want to go over some reasons for divorce. Okay, we can think about why marriages fail, and I'm just gonna go over some general reasons why marriages fail or sometimes end in divorce, and then we'll look at some more specific reasons. We're gonna start with some general reasons and then try to make it more personal. But I was reading on an article, rather a manuscript here from a lectureship. And it says that in 1890, the divorce number in the United States was 5,000 divorces. Okay, 5,000 divorces in 1890. And then by 1976, less than 100 years later, that number was 1 million. Okay, you see there's a trend in increasing on the number of divorces in history. And then by 1992, that's closer to where we are now tonight, that it was 1.2 million divorces. Okay, now the numbers, of course, have changed. There are more divorces than there were before. Okay, and then they have fluctuated a little bit, but we know without a doubt that divorce is an issue, not only in this city or in this country, but in many places. It's an issue. It's a problem. Because we read in the scriptures that God did not intend for couples to divorce, for husband and wife to divorce. Okay? There's no honorable way to end a marriage but through death. Okay? That's the only honorable way to finish it. I know we know in Matthew 19, and if you want to go with me there, Matthew 19, I'm going to begin just reading that section just to refresh us. And we're going to see the first reason for divorce, okay, here in this section mentioned by the Lord himself, okay? And I'm reading here from the New King James Version, Matthew 19. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings, that he departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife just for any reason? Okay, we see there, just for any reason, just to divorce her. Okay. Maybe a synonym of the modern day no-fault divorce. Maybe, okay? You see, this is okay to do so? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made him at the beginning made him male and female? And said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder or separate in this version. Now notice verse 7. Then they said to him, we're going to go back to this section in a minute. But notice verse 7. Then they said to him, why then did Moses command people to give a certificate of divorce to put her away? And then notice one of the reasons. He said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. So we see, because of the hardness of their hearts, it was permitted. It was allowed by the law of Moses to put them away, okay, to give him a certificate, an official certificate of divorce. Okay, and it was also a way to protect the wife from being taken again by the husband who divorced her. Okay, with that certificate of divorce, he was not allowed to take her back once he had divorced her. So there was it's preventing abuse in some way over here. But we see there's a reason here, because of the hardness of your heart. Something you are doing wrong. Something you are not doing correct. It's the fault is on you. It's not God's idea. It's not God's design. But because from the beginning, it was not so. So when we think about reasons for divorce, we can maybe we can classify them in two broad categories. One of them is causes that society has made us believe or has introduced, okay, that make divorce faster. And then there are personal causes, okay? Things that pertain society as a whole, and then things that pertain ourselves individually, okay? For example, thinking about society as a whole, we've seen that the traditional model of marriage, and we can say the biblical model of marriage, that being the head of the home, mom being a helpmeet for dad, following his leadership, and they're both being parents with discipline, we see that that has been challenged along the time. Psychologists and scholars have come to say, well, you don't need to discipline your children. You need to be permissive. Just let them do whatever they want to do. You see, the model is being challenged, and a lot of people have bought into it. And they say, okay, that sounds like nice. I like it. I don't have to worry. I don't have to see him cry. I don't have to see him sad because of discipline. I just let him do whatever he wants to do. And we're all happy. Well, maybe, what if mom, she wants to be permissive? What if dad, he wants to be authoritative? Now there's a conflict there, you see, between parents, because society is influencing the home, and those conflicts might maybe lead to divorce in the long run. So you see, society as a whole. Then, I was thinking about this morning, there's this program named Head Start, and I understand it's a good program, okay? It's for certain children who qualify, but I was shocked that they take from 0 to 5, okay? Beginning at age 0, they take children if they qualify, okay? And I'm using this as an example because one of the ways society has also changed the family is by, for instance, telling us that education is no longer our responsibility, okay? That recreation is no longer our responsibility. But there's so many agencies that can't take care of recreation for children. There's many agencies that can't take care of education for children. I hope I'm making sense. Okay? To the point that parents can say they can disconnect from the children, just give them away to agencies, and they'll take care of them for half a day or who knows how long. That's the point, okay, that I want to make. So society has changed the family in a way in general, and things like that open the doors for conflict and divorce, okay, in the families. But when we talk about parenting responsibilities and authority in the home, we talked some about discipline in the last classes we have had together. But concerning permissiveness, I don't think that's the Bible model, okay? Bible model, the model of the Bible has discipline. Factor in. In fact, for instance, Proverbs 13:24 says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." Okay, there's discipline, an element of discipline that has to be in the home. And let me tell you something, parents. I mean, I'm not an experienced father, but something I learned. That we have to get used to seeing our children cry sometimes. It's okay. It's okay if they cry. We don't have to comfort them for every little tear they want to shed. I hope I'm making sense. If you think I'm mistaken, you can correct me, okay? But please don't do so in front of everybody. Just wait and you tell me at the end, okay? I appreciate that, okay? But it's okay if they cry. It's okay when they're babies. In fact, psychologists or people who have to study them, they know that babies, when they cry before they sleep, they learn to soothe themselves. See what I'm saying? They learn to calm themselves to the point that they don't cry as much, and they don't cry as much, and they get used to it, and they soothe themselves. I hope that word's making sense, okay? It's more technical. I don't use it every day. But it has benefits. So when there's discipline, of course, sometimes the child is going to cry. He's going to break our hearts as parents. Okay, we're going to discipline him because he was rude, because he pushed his sister or his brother, or he beat his cousin or something. And there's discipline, okay? And then we need to use common sense in how we discipline, okay? We talk about authoritative, okay? We talk to them, we tell them what's wrong. We tell them they're going to be punished for this and that. They're going to be out of TV, or they're going to be out of something they want to do. They go outside or whatever. And they will cry, depending on the age, of course. And maybe some adolescents also will cry. I don't know. But it depends. But it's going to be okay, because it's going to be just for a moment, and it's going to be for the good of the child. Okay? It's going to be okay. Now, Proverbs 19:8. If you're taking note, I'm just reading some verses on discipline that I have here in my outline. But Proverbs 19:18, chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. Okay? And while there is hope, meaning while the child is still moldable, okay? While the child's attitude can still be changed. Okay, let's work with them, okay? And then, because if we don't do so, we're setting them for destruction. That's what Proverbs said, okay? Either we let them suffer a little with us in a good way, explaining them why they have to go through this disciplinary measure, or else they're going to pay the consequences later on, okay, down the road. Now, another proverb, Proverbs 23, verse 13 through 14. Okay? I'm going to let someone read it if you can find it. Proverbs 23, verse 13 through 14.
Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shalt deliver his soul from hell.
Okay, very good. And this verse chat can be it can be taken in two senses. Okay, we know there's one sense, but some say, well, if you hit him with a rod, you're not going to beat him to death. Okay, depends on how you see it, but actually, if you discipline him, he's not going to die in the future. Okay, you're saving his soul. Okay, and he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. Okay, so we take that parallelism, and he gives us the answer. Okay, he's talking about discipline will spur the child from dying, or the word here going to deliver him from hell. Okay, Proverbs 29:17. I'm going to read this one. If someone can look for Hebrews 12:7. And someone else can look for 2 Samuel 7:14. And I'm going to 2 Samuel 7:14 and Hebrews 12:7. And I'm going to read the last proverb that I have here, Proverbs 29:17. It says, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give the light to your soul. Okay? So we see that children need direction. I told you before that especially boys, they like to receive instructions, okay? If they are without instructions, they're kind of lost. Or we are kind of lost, okay, as we're growing up. So we tell them, okay, you do this and that, and then after this you go this and that, and then, okay, they understand, they do it, they get excited, and they say, okay, I understand, I'm going to do this and that, and the other. Okay, they might walk by toys on the floor, but if you tell them, hey, whenever you walk and you see a toy on the floor, pick it up. Okay, yes, yeah, now they got instruction, they can follow it. Okay, very good. So, what's Hebrews 12:7 says concerning discipline? Hebrews 12:7.
If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten?
Thank you, Randy. Very good. Okay. So this discipline comes from a loving father, a loving mother. It tells us that discipline should be applied in love. Okay. And I know we're talking about divorce, but I'm just making this point because this change in parenting has led to conflict in families and then eventually to possible divorce. All right, and the last verse, 2 Samuel 7:14, and this is God speaking about David. Okay, notice how he talks about David. 2 Samuel 7:14.
I will be his father, and he shall be my son. If he commits iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men and with the bows of the sons of men.
Very good. So while society might tell us to change the way we parent, the roles in the home, okay, we need to go back to see what the role of parents is in the Bible, what the role of a husband and a wife is in the Bible, and that's going to protect us, guard us from any potential conflict that could lead to thinking about divorce, okay? And I'm talking in general, okay? I know as Christians, and possibly most of us here, we were committed to our marriages, but we might fail to consider factoring the rest of the people where a small conflict, they might be called unreconcilable and grounds for divorce, okay? So if we go back to the Bible and then preach this message and help those who have a different view see it the way God teaches it, it might change their lives. Okay? Now, another reason why there's divorces is casual marriages. Okay? Hope that makes sense. And society has told us that marriage should have an emphasis on this romantic love. Okay? Emphasis on romantic love, and you know, romantic love is going to lead you to hasty marriages, and as fast as you get married, because there's no solid ground, as fast as you divorce, because you are building your marriage on a cloud, okay? You're building your marriage on nothing else but physical, sexual attractiveness, okay? And that's going to lead to a fast marriage, and that's going to lead to a fast divorce as well. So that's what society has influenced us to believe, okay, concerning marriage, and that leads to divorce, okay? Now, what does the Bible say concerning these casual marriages and hasty marriages and based on this this type of love? You remember Romans 7, okay? Romans 7, we have that illustration of a wife and a husband and how long they should live. I'm in Romans 7. I'm just going to read the first few verses. Or do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who know the law. Okay, speaking to Christians who were Jews by nationality. That the law has dominion over the man as long as he lives. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she's released from the law of her husband. Okay? That's good. That's a very clear point right there. Now, to the point that, for instance, and let me look real quick to these examples, but in Genesis chapter 23, for example, and we can think about several examples in the Bible, how, in fact, for instance, I'm trying to think of... you see, Mary, there's a point where we don't read anymore about Joseph, but the implication is that Joseph might have passed away by the time Jesus was crucified. You see, Jesus telling John to take care of her and her to take care of John and so on. But we see an example there of staying until one of them died. But more specifically, for instance, in Genesis 23, we have the example of Abraham and Sarah. And it's so beautiful, and I'm going to read this section because I think it's very really good illustration. I mean, Genesis 23, I'm just going to read verses 1 and 2. But notice that Sarah lived 127 years. You know, look at this marriage. 127 years. That's a long time. Okay? It's a long marriage. And it reminds me of, I think it was Brother Barry Hatcher who was celebrating his, I don't remember what year it was, but I think it was his 30th anniversary at an Applebee's. I know he likes his chicken fried steak, and I'm sure that was what he was eating at an Applebee's with Melanie, his wife. And then the lady at the counter came and said, what are you celebrating? And I said, well, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. And I said, you're celebrating what? Our 30th anniversary. I said, oh, I never heard of such a thing. And my relationship don't last more than a year. So what she did is she went to the kitchen and to the other waitress and waitresses, and they signed up a card, all of them, congratulating them for their anniversary. And so that's something really neat. Someone who wasn't acquainted with this type of commitment, okay? Now, notice what happened when Sarah died. So Sarah died, okay, in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abraham came to mourn for Sarah, notice, and to weep for her. You see this commitment here? Until death departed them. You see, he wasn't in a way, relieved that she was gone. He was mourning because he loved her. So there must have been something else besides sexual attraction that got them together for that long. And if that works, we need to know about it, because society is telling us that marriages is just casual, okay? And I'm going to make a point in a little bit concerning the consumer view of marriage in our society as well nowadays. Okay, so just like Abraham and Sarah, and I'm not going to go to these other passages, also Jacob was with Rachel until she died. Okay? And we remember, and to the point that, for instance, Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah were all in the same tomb. Okay? The same cave of Machpelah. They were all buried there. And in fact, Leah, the other wife of Jacob, was buried there as well. Remember, Rachel didn't get to be buried there because she was buried in Bethlehem, okay, on a trip, okay, when Benjamin was born. So, but the rest of the couples were buried together, all right? That was a commitment, so strong the commitment they had. It wasn't nothing casual, okay? Now, society tells us this, and I'm going to make this point real quick. Your love should be based on eros, on physical sexual attractiveness, and then on this storge love, family love, okay, and then on this friendship love, okay, and maybe they don't even consider agape love because they might not know it or something like that. But the basis is eros, erotic, this sexual attraction, this looks, only that. But God tells us that the base, the foundation, for our love or marriage should be this agape love. And let me tell you one definition of agape love is the quality of warm regard for an interest in another. That's agape love. The quality of warm regard for an interest in another. This is agape love, sacrificial love, take sacrifice. Okay, when that's the foundation, then everything else can fall into place. And the marriage is not going to be casual. It's going to be a good foundation. Now, another reason for divorce, and I'm just giving you the way society has gone through it. Okay? I'm not drawing any conclusions, because one of the reasons for divorce in today's society is when there were more jobs for women. Okay? Remember at the beginning, the traditional family structure was challenged, or rather changed. Well, this is one of the items, more jobs just for women. So These two paycheck families, they redefined the family roles. Now there's two check families. Now who's going to take care of the kids? Now you, husband, you need to take care more of the kids because I have more working hours. You see, and there's a redefinition of the family roles. But let me just give you some facts, okay, on this. Studies have found out that women who are employed exercise greater degree of power in the marriage. And I'm talking in general, okay? I'm not talking about Christians. Okay, in general. Now, I have here something very important to mention. Although most husbands, they welcome the additional income, they are happy with it, but many have found it difficult to adjust to the wife's new role. It's a struggle for many men, in general, okay? Now, being married to a woman with a busy schedule, an income of her own, and outside friendships and commitments may cause a husband to feel insecure and resentful, okay? These are conclusions that have, in general, have been drawn from two paycheck families. Now, one last fact. Numerous studies have shown that there is more divorce among families in which the wife works. And again, I'm not addressing Christians, I'm addressing in general. Okay, this is society as a whole. Okay, why is there more divorce in places where women work along with the husband? Well, because women they're no longer dependent on the man. So it's easier for them, if they get in a difficulty, to say, well, I'm just going to walk out. I'm just going to walk. Because I can take care of myself. I don't need him anyways. Okay, makes it easier. Okay? Another reason why is because wives now are exposed to the risks of family unfaithfulness in the work. You see, there was already a risk with dad working. Now mom was working. Now there's more risk. You see? And I'll give you an example. For instance, I used to work for one of the biggest cookie making company in Mexico. And then right across the street is the second or one of the, they're the two biggest cookie or bread making company in Mexico. One is called Gamesa, that's where I used to work, and the other one is called Bimbo. That's, they're neighbors. But that place, Bimbo, okay, they make all sorts of sweet bread, cookies, and things like that, and they prohibited, you know, the workers in the line, where they're making cookies, where they're doing the work, they prohibited women from working there, just men. Why? Maybe they made the rule, because if they were working together, that will promote marital unfaithfulness if there's women and women working there. So this company, I don't know the legal ramifications of how they got away with it, but that's their policy. Only men work in the line. Okay? Just men. Because we want to uphold families. We don't want our workers to fall in affairs in our facilities. So that's the way they do it. In my place where I work, it was everybody, men and women. In fact, you couldn't even tell who was which because, you know, you have to wear this mask and this, you have to cover your head and stuff. So you don't even know if you were a man and a woman right there. So it didn't matter, I guess, where I was. But of course, that's what happened in that example. But let me just give you some Bible texts on the wife. Is it sinful? Can we say it's sinful for a woman to work? It wouldn't be sinful because, you know, there's single mothers who have to work, okay, and so on. We can use more examples. That's not the point of this. That's not the lesson I want to draw from this point, rather, okay. But notice Titus 2:4-5, okay. What I think, or what we can see, that can lead to unfaithfulness towards God, is neglecting these Bible commandments. That's what's important. And I'm going to do what Brother Hardiman said on the Tabernacle Sermons. He continually used on his sermons. He said, I'm just going to quote the scriptures. That's all. I'm quoting the scriptures, and they're plain and simple to understand. Notice in Titus 2, 4, and 5, notice the older women should admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God might not be blasphemed. Okay, there we see some of the role of the women. Okay, and let me tell you this. If women, let's say they don't work, if they were going to stick to this, wives, this is going to keep them from potential conflict that can lead them to divorce. This is the safe ground, safe place to be. And God is not, He knows what He's telling us. Okay? And that's the conclusion we have learned. The science tells us that there's more divorce when both of them work. Okay? Now, 1 Timothy 2, 11 through 15. Okay? Again, let a woman learn in silence without submission. And I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing. You see? If they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. Okay? And one last verse on this point that I want to draw is also from 1 Timothy, but now chapter 5, verse 14. Okay? Talking about these young widows. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, that they bear children, and that they manage the house, to give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Okay, so we see here the responsibilities of the women to marry, bear children, manage the house. Okay, now, the husband is the ruler, as we read in 1 Timothy 3, concerning the elders. Okay, in other words, they're the rulers. They exercise this position of leadership in the home. And the wife is the manager of the affairs of the home. You see, there's a teamwork here. It's a teamwork. Husband leads, wife follows. Okay? Husband's the ruler. The wife's the manager of the home affairs. Okay? It's a teamwork. Each one has a responsibility. Okay? Another reason why divorce, I'm talking about in general, is this philosophy of happiness. Okay, somewhere along the line or along history, society, we started believing that marriage, the purpose of marriage is to make me happy. See what I'm saying? And I call this type of marriage the Amazon customer review marriage. See what I'm saying? You buy an item in Amazon, and you have this customer review, and you have 5 stars, and we see there people are making returns because they received the product and it didn't please them. So they just send it back. And we think this applies in marriage. So we get married. This woman, I marry her because I thought that she was going to satisfy my every need and make me happy. But it turns out that it didn't work that well. Well, I just want to return her. Or the same thing. The woman said, well, this man, I thought that he was going to make me happy, work only for me and satisfy my every need just for me, and it didn't work that way, so I'm just going to return him. See, this is the consumer mindset in society of marriage, and you wouldn't let me lie that this is prominent in our society. Okay, if you don't make me happy, then that's it, because you're supposed to make me happy, you're supposed to please me, and then if you become old, an old model, all I can do is just get rid of you and I get a newer model. A newer version. See? Happens all the time with the phones. But we forget that wives are not phones. Okay? Husbands are not objects that we can just discard and say, well, it depends on whether he pleases me or not. Okay? Now, this is something. But in fact, husband and wives, that we both have responsibilities to each other. And this consumer philosophy of marriage is like if you were to list the 3 more important reasons why marriages fail or there are divorces, I would say, number 1, selfishness. Number two, selfishness. And number three, selfishness. You see? When there's selfishness, when it's you please me, that's all that matters, then marriages are not going to work. Because we must be in subjection to each other. We must yield to each other. We must serve each other. Husband must love her wives, and then wives should love their husbands. Okay? It's a mutual service, a mutual sacrifice, a mutual commitment that we're making one towards the other. Okay? This is important for us to consider. Now, one more point I want to make here on general reasons why there's divorces is on these laws. Okay? There's more permissive divorce laws in society. It's easier to divorce. And the example I was using earlier is that non-fault divorce. And I don't know the history, but I suppose there used to be, there had to be a reason for divorce, okay? A specific reason, like adultery, okay? But now non-fault divorce is just divorce for any reason. But what can we say about this, okay? Of course, in Matthew 19:9, we see that there has to be a reason. There's an exception. Except it be for fornication, okay? That there can be this divorce, okay? Can one, for instance, can one still be legally, let me just think about it. Can I still be legally divorced if I submit a non-fault divorce in the government's eyes? I can, I mean, in the government's eyes, that wouldn't be what God authorized. Okay? That's not the reason God gave for divorce. Okay? So that's something for us to think about. Now, if I can legally submit this non-fault divorce, does that mean that God is behind it, is supporting it? No. Okay? Now, what can we say about this, the government and the human laws? Okay, it's important for us to think about it, but when human law is consistent with divine revelation, then we must submit to that law. But the other thing, the contrary to this, when this human civil law, when it's arrogant, when it's arbitrary, and it's contrary to divine will, we don't have the responsibility to submit to such laws, okay? Because they're not supported by God. They're not founded in the Bible, okay? To the point that civil authority might make legal something that is morally wrong, okay? Or maybe the government, this human law, might not demand to the child of God to do something that is morally wrong. They cannot force us to do something that is morally wrong. Okay? And then civil authorities cannot prohibit us from doing what is right in the eyes of God. Okay? So this is important for us to consider. Now, I was going to read here in Acts 4:19, we rather obey God than men. Okay? Now, is there any comments right here before we finish? I'm going to let you. Yes, please.
Have you ever thought about Hollywood being a negative influence on our kids watching?
Yes.
Where they see, all they see is, the sex and all this.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't see Ren 10-10 anymore. And that right there is.
Yes. And it's very ironic because, they're artists. I mean, they're actors and actresses. And they very famous. Everybody knows them. And we want to watch their movies and so on. But usually, they're the ones who struggle more with this type of commitments. A lot of them, I'm not saying everyone, but usually, okay? And it's a bad example. Yes, definitely. I agree with you. Any other comment? Yes, Anna, please.
I was just thinking earlier when you were talking about disciplining kids.
Yes.
One of the things that my mom always told me was that if you're growing up was never discipline out of anger. If you are angry, whenever you're trying to discipline your kid, take a minute and say, listen, I'm going to discipline you later, but I have to calm down. And she talked about how when she and dad were raising us, she would try to make spanking like a business transaction. like, you know, you did this, you have to give this, you know, in
yes.
response. And she told the story of my brother Caleb when he was little. One time she had to spank him like 8 times in a row because he wouldn't stay where she told him to stay. And finally she sat him down and had this conversation with him about, listen, if you don't listen to me, you won't listen to the policeman, you won't listen to God. And after that, he actually heard her and kind of started obeying. But I just thought that was so interesting because it was a very calm approach to try to discipline him and teach him. I think that's probably really important.
Yeah, it's very, I'm glad you made that point, because being single, you say, ah, what are they talking about? But now you become a parent, you get angry. We get angry. So we need to be careful, calm down, and then do like this other father he used to do. The children used to misbehave at church, and he said, well, you're going to see when we get home. So he wouldn't spank them at church or anything. But then when they got home and they're eating or whatever, say, okay, let's go to the room. So why? What's going on? Well, remember, you did such and such, so you just lay down there or whatever, or see what I'm saying? Say, and then he was very calm by then. Okay, I mean, and they understood what was happening. But anyways, that's an excellent point. We do get angry, and we can make mistakes when we're angry. And I know most of you went through that. Except for Chad, I don't think he gets angry when he's disciplined. Yes. But anyways, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for your comments and for your attention. I'm gonna try next on Sunday. I'm gonna go to some other causes, like maybe negative behavior, like infidelity, like lack of commitment, and lack of following the roles of the husband and the wives as causes of divorce. If you wanna think about it for Sunday, that's what I'm gonna be talking about on the next lesson. Thank you so much for your attention.